life goes by quickly, and in my game, definitely we take a bit more risk than the average person on the planet, even though sometimes we pretend we don't. So it's definitely taught me to be a bit more real and try not to take anything for granted.
Why are so many people fascinated by flying? What lessons can we learn from skydiving? And how can we pursue our passion? Who better to ask than Will Penny, a world champion freestyle skydiver who has already completed 19,000 jumps. Will tells us how his passion for skydiving became his profession and why it is so important for us to pursue our dream. We talk about ego, fear, personal growth, and of course, the adrenaline rush. This podcast brings you stories from and about people who stepped into the unknown. Stories about fear, uncertainty, the illusion of security, or I don't know. Let's see what it will be about. My name is Katarina Bayer, and I will host you on this journey into the unknown. I've never skydived in my life before. If you have to explain skydiving to somebody who has never skydived before, like me, what would you say to them?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. I think it's a really introspective challenge where you go against what your primary instincts are telling you that you shouldn't do. Or you should do, I suppose that they're very closely connected. So the experience becomes very much like pushing yourself to do something that your mind is telling you that you shouldn't do, but you actually really want to experience. So it's quite a mental game. And then the actual sensation, the first few seconds are a little bit perhaps petrifying the first time you do it. And then very quickly after you've left the plane, you start to get into this feeling that you're actually flying, you know, because you're quite far away from references that give you the reference of speed and distance. So you got like two parts to it, the free fall part. Like the hardest part would be probably in the door. And then the next most impactful part where you're going to feel your stomach drop would be when you leave the plane. And then after that, it becomes actually quite a peaceful experience. And then when your parachute opens, it's really nice because you're quite disconnected from any clutter of the world, right? And you have a beautifully uninterrupted view of the world and a perspective, right, of how you fit into this reality. And it's quite a moving experience, I suppose, you know. So it's playing on several parts of what make us to be human beings, like the mind, the ego, the heart. And it's one of those things that's really difficult to describe, one of those things that should be lived, you know. I really think the words kind of fail, you know. But it's also like it's this tremendously like beautifully intense journey that as soon as it's over, you're like, but did that actually really happen?
Do you still have sometimes the fear when you're in the door before you jump, or does it like pass after so many jumps that you've done?
I would say that it depends on what's going on. There is always this fear, this ever-present fear, but it can be quite converted more into a state of focus and like utmost respect for what you're doing. But yeah, times in a different place, or even if you're just in a different mental state, I suppose, or mindset, sometimes your emotion can be a bit stronger, but the fear of the unknown starts to fade away whereas you just start to have fears of the things that you do know that can go wrong, which I suppose might be more terrifying than just like the ignorance is bliss theory, right?
Whenever I speak to people, so many people tell me if they have like one superpower, they would like to fly. Why do you think that so many humans have this intense wish to fly? Why is it so fascinating for us?
That's a really interesting question. And I never really thought about it too much until you just, I would be lying if I said I didn't thought about it too much. I think perhaps like the main three ways that we can interact with the elements would be land, water, and air, because we don't really do so well in the fire, right? So we can manage ourselves on land. And because we're mammals, we are quite comfortable in water. So we can swim and we can hold our breath. And then the one way of experiencing our planet that we see other creatures doing, like birds and insects, I suppose, would be to fly. And that one's a little bit further out of reach. So perhaps it's this intriguing kind of nature, wanting to know what it's like to do something that we actually don't really have any evolutionary traits to actually do. But yes, I think it's something that a lot of people have thought about and perhaps even dreamt about. And then with inside of that, probably a lot less people will actually pursue some type of experience with it, because even though our modern world is quite intertwined with commercial and recreational aviation, there's still a vast majority of the planet who will never actually fly in a plane. So inside of that, there's a way, way smaller percentage who decides it's something nice to do on a Sunday and jump out of that plane, I suppose.
You know, I was always amazed what water does to my body and how it feels to be free in the water. How do you experience this free fall on your body? Like, what is the body sensations that you have when you're falling and then when the parachute opens?
Yeah, for me, that's actually one of the coolest parts of the sport, is that sensation on the body. Because, you know, some people think that air is not there because we can't see it and we can't really touch it, even though we are all the time. But when air is not moving, it seems not to be there. But as you increase the speed that you're traveling in the airflow, or the airflow, the speed is increased, the air actually becomes almost like a fluid medium. So it becomes not too distant from the sensation of water. But obviously it's just a lot less dense. And then the interesting thing on the body is where that air is hitting your body and where you are playing with your center of gravity and balance, which becomes a very important part of the sport if you start to want to learn how to get good at flying. You know, you have to kind of pursue some type of obsessive journey towards trying to understand where that airflow is going and how your body is behaving inside of it. And there are sensations connected to that. So you can have these sensations of relatively going faster, slower, and in some ways even up and down, even though as soon as you jump out of a plane, there's no moment you're going up. But you can have these sensations with inside of the air that are actually pretty strongly connected to the pleasurable side of the sport, I believe.
What you are doing is more than just flying as a hobby or for sports. I heard that you grew up on a drop zone and you had your first tandem flight when you were 10 and your first solo flight when you were 15. And if I read correctly, so far you've done about 19,000 jumps. This is a number, I don't know, that is incredible. Yeah. And you reinvented free skydiving and you actually became a world champion in freestyle skydiving. When did you become aware that skydiving is less a hobby and you really want to make a profession out of it?
You know, like, it was definitely something that was quite present in my life. Well, actually, it's been very present in my life since I was a young boy. And I pursued it as something, basically it was like a family thing that we did. So it was just pretty normal, and I always enjoyed it. But it took me until I was like, after I finished school, I took a year off before university, and I was traveling around Australia, and I went to Indonesia to do some surfing. And the one afternoon, I remember I was at a drop zone, and it was like, I don't know, like some random day of the week, like midweek or something. And I just went up to do a jump. And I remember like opening up the door and looking outside and just thinking to myself, like, actually, this is something that I want to pursue as much as I can, because I just found it kind of like a decent life hack. You know, I was thinking, well, this is a way that I can actually live. And this is something that makes me feel happy. So there was definitely like a turning point when I decided, okay, like I'm gonna go for it. And it was also largely due to the fact that I was surrounded by people who inspired me, and for sure, like some of the people who inspired me the most on this journey have been my family and the support, and then other people just that I was hanging around with at the time showed me that this is something that you can do. So I decided to go back to South Africa and start, and then complete my university studies, which was a fantastic decision, of course. But there was a really big fire burning inside of me that I knew I didn't want to be sitting for the rest of my life behind a computer or inside of a kind of workshop. So I decided that I was gonna travel a bit after university and work in skydiving, and then it just ended up so many parallel life projects started to emerge from that same decision. And yeah, that's going back like almost 19 years now, you know. So, and there's been no looking back, and absolutely no regrets, for sure.
You said you went to university and you studied product design. I mean, you described it before, like you look down there and you know you want to do skydiving as much as possible. But for me, it's still like a passion. And did you ever had like this moment where you're like, isn't it more secure when I have a normal job and I do my degree and I continue as a product designer? Was there any time where you're like, no, I take the risk now and I continue skydiving?
Yes, definitely. But is it really a more secure decision to do more mainstream type of life decisions at the compromise of what you really want to do? That's actually way more scary for me, you know, because I believe I did very well at university and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And what I studied has helped me a lot in my career as a skydiver. But there was a defining intersection there, right, where I finished and I had done well, and I knew that I would have been a good product designer if I had decided to dedicate myself to that full time. But at the same time, I knew inside of me that wasn't really what I wanted to do with my life at that point. So yes, it's definitely a slightly more unconventional career path and perhaps a bit more risky. But over time, I think the people who've dedicated their professional lives and their passion to pursuing something that they really believe in have also kind of in a way shaped the society that we have today. You know, I mean, imagine if it was, it's not the most amazing example, but even 10 years ago, there was no such thing as a job in social media. There was definitely no such thing as an influencer. Now you have people who are earning six figures who are just cruising around the world documenting what they're doing, right? So I think there's definitely a bit of a shift in the way that we can live on the planet, and I believe that people of my generation and the one that's come after and the one before, they've all been very instrumental in shaping our industry into something that has become a place where we can all actually live a good life and follow our passion and help the sport to evolve, right? And it's ended up shifting a lot into a very much more professional space and become a pretty massive industry too, right? Like there's the, with the birth of the wind tunnels, there's like a multi-million industry that's come around from that technological innovation. And also like skydiving has put many, many cool destinations on the map. Like for example, a place where I spend a lot of time is Dubai, and Dubai has a skydiving center, a drop zone basically in the marina, you know? So it is something that's, that if it wasn't for the people of my parents' generation and my generation and the one off and the one that's come next, if we didn't believe in this and we didn't decide to really go for it, I think that would have been slightly more petrifying than everyone decided to get a job in a bank. And there's nothing wrong with getting a job in a bank.
How you describe it, it sounds so smooth and like everything worked out. Were there ever times when you were struggling and thinking, did I really take the right decision?
Yeah, of course. There have been, there will be, and there are always. But I suppose we could ask the same question to yourself, right? Or to a doctor or to a lawyer, you know? And the thing is that a lot of people too who decided to choose a life a little bit more mainstream and a bit more secure, it's probably a wiser decision, but they might be the people who're struggling inside of them for their own happiness. Or someone might say, I really wanted to be a writer, but I decided to be a doctor because it was a more kind of secure career path. So yeah, definitely there's been times that haven't been easy, but I don't think that's necessarily related to the choices that I made in terms of a career. I think that's something that we're all going to face, right?
Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. What are the most important things that skydiving has taught you?
Well, it's a pretty big question. The most important things that it's taught me is, I suppose, to be real to yourself and to really try to manage your ego, which doesn't always work out, and really intense form of respect for the time we have in this life in several ways. The one is like not to waste it doing something you don't want to do, and another one is to really appreciate it because it goes so quickly, right? And also just to really appreciate and nurture the relationships that you have in life, because life goes by quickly, and in my game definitely we take a bit more risk than the average person on the planet, even though sometimes we pretend we don't. So it's definitely taught me to be a bit more real and try not to take anything for granted, and also in like a really strong sense of teamwork, because pretty much all of the relationships that we have in one form or the other are based on some type of mutual kind of respect and contribution. So it's definitely taught me to appreciate that whatever you achieve wasn't done on your own. There's people behind that have helped you to do that and to respect that. And the more you can work together and appreciate everybody for having the role that they did in what you're doing, we just kind of keep on feeding each other.
Mm-hmm. Because you mentioned risk, I have to quote you. You once said, don't become a base jumper and you probably survive. And I heard you saying that you lost some friends, while skydiving, and it's a pretty risky sport, or profession. How do you differentiate between what your ego tells you and, what actually your mind tells you? Because I guess you have to take a lot of risks because you are a professional skydiver.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a very much a human thing that we have to learn to manage, And perhaps a little bit harder if you're a man, because our egos sometimes outweigh our brain. You know? I think that's some type of evolutionary trait that we have, right? So I think you learn how to manage that if you want to grow in that area. If you're prepared to accept that your ego has a huge role to do with every decision you make, it's basically your heart, your brain, and your ego. And again, if you're playing in this kind of sphere of reality, your ego is a huge presence. You will also get your ego put in place a few times, and your ego might hurt you or kill you. So I think the more in tune that you can be in your personal growth to realizing when it's actually your ego that wants to do something or that's making a decision, before your brain or your heart, then you can start to put up some red flags in your decisions. And this, maybe some people have it a little bit easier. Otherwise, it's something that's going to happen with experience and maturity. But you have to reach the experience and maturity before your ego wins that battle, right? So I think if you like want to accept that that's a big part of it, and you try to put that into your way of being, then you can learn how to at least acknowledge the presence of the ego, and then after that, try to be a little bit more balanced and manage it.
Just imagining that I would jump out of a plane in half an hour, it gives me chills all over my body, and I have an adrenaline rush. Do you still have this adrenaline rush, or do you have to like do things that other things in your life that gives you the same rush, or do you still have it with skydiving?
No, I definitely, for sure, I still have it skydiving. It would be a very different type of rush to what you have, because the first time you jump, it would be very much the adrenaline would be like a fight or flight reflex,
yeah,
and a very much a sensory overload type thing. Survival mode would kick in big time. And that is always underlying in every single jump that every single person does. But you kind of get used to it, and your experience tells you that, hey, it's probably going to be okay. But then we also, like, you asked me if I have to look for other places in my life to get the rush. It's more like I have to look deeper inside skydiving to get that same secretion from the adrenal glands. But we have pretty good ways of doing that. So, like, the more you jump, the more you're going to grasp, the more you can do safely. So the more sometimes, the more you can push yourself, the more radical kind of flying you can do. And then that brings you to a similar place. And definitely, there's a few things too. Like in my personal journey, like when I started to compete, that was for me was a massive, massive place to be with those new that kind of feeling of the new sensations of skydiving, just because of the amount of work you have to put in to arrive there, and then everything that's riding on it, and the consequences of you not achieving what you want to achieve. So that definitely was quite an eye opener for me. That brought me to some places where perhaps the rush in a way was even greater than my first jump. Very different, very kind of almost unfair to compare, but you can look deeper inside of what you're doing to find that same kind of adrenal satisfaction.
Have you ever thought about it, how long you can still fly? Like, is there an age limit or something in skydiving?
Yeah, I get asked this question almost weekly, you know. And I mean, there's no, like, in a sense, age limit to how old or how young you need to be. Of course, like when you're younger, you have a bit more time, you know, normally ahead of you, but then you don't have the experience. And as you get older, you start to ask these kind of existential questions of what are we doing and where am I going? But then you have the experience behind you and with you. So I have some like very close friends of mine and mentors who are in their like 50s or mid 50s who still at the top of the sport, but you don't just arrive there passively without working to sustain yourself in that place. And then, of course, like once you've gone through a path in any career, then the way that you can be relevant inside that industry would change, right? So like, for example, if you're a Formula One driver, perhaps you decide to retire from actually driving and you start to work with the team and you start to be a manager of a team, or you start to train drivers. And then perhaps you can end up even owning a team or et cetera. There's many ways you can go about it. So I think one thing that I'm really happy to accept and I've decided on is that I would like to see myself remaining in this industry for my working life, but I hope too that my roles will evolve naturally with time, which they already have. I'm still very active. I'm still jumping a lot. But definitely I've made some decisions and invested some of my time to have a different, place where I can share my experience and contribute to the industry, and also looking a little bit further ahead to how I could sustain myself in the sport without being in a place that I have to jump every day. So yeah, I mean, there is no defined limit as to how long you can jump. It just depends what you want to do and if you want to retain the same role that you have, or you want to perhaps use the experience that you've got and then make a new place for yourself.
So you're a skydiving instructor as well. And I recently discovered for myself the power of visualization. How much of the instruction you give to new students is about mental preparation and visualization, and how much can this contribute to the jump?
Yeah, I'm really happy you asked that question, because it's something that I actually work a lot with and more in recent years. Because I believe that the biggest contribution I will make to somebody is actually in their mental training. So the mental side of the sport is super important, and connected to that, the visualization is a tool that's I think it's kind of undervalued in a way, and in a lot of training. Even within skydiving, it's used, but I don't think it's used as much as it should be. And when you compete, it's something that we taught how to do, and something that you carry with you from that point forward. And yeah, the visualization is a super powerful tool. And once you can find a way to allow people to visualize what you would like them to do or how you need them to perform, you give them tremendous tools for the sport that they can even like copy paste into normal life. So it's a super big part of our game. And I was working with a couple of colleagues of mine to develop some training programs to actually grow new teachers and coaches in the sport. And one of my colleagues had a really good point. He said, you know, in the past 20 years, we went so far down the rabbit hole just to make ourselves better flyers, but we didn't put that same amount of energy to make us better teachers. So now we're kind of at this super interesting place where the flying is technically is on a really nice steep exponential curve. And there's more and more people who jump in on board trying to understand how we can teach those skills. And that becomes a really nice circle of seeking knowledge for yourself and then giving back and always trying to keep in a growth mindset. And that's kind of where I find the sports at a really, really nice place right now, because people are super happy to look deeper into the mental side of the game. And this, in turn, I believe is a huge driving force behind making us much better at what we're doing.
How can I imagine the visualization? Do you like watch clips of somebody skydiving and then try to embody it? Or what is, can you give an example what you do when you visualize like skydiving?
Yeah, definitely. Like when you want to visualize skydiving, sometimes because it's a three-dimensional sport, at least free flying and freestyle, the artistic disciplines, it's moving in three dimensions. So it's not so similar. It's not it's a little bit different from how we interact in the world, because it's usually a bit more of a 2D world that we live in. So the third dimension adds a bit of a extra tricky thing for the brain to compute. So we use sometimes like little mannequins, like little dolls that you can see, like how people are interacting with each other. And then you can look at it. So you can look at it from the outside and you can see, okay, this is me, this is you. And we need to go like this and then down and up or whatever it might be. So you can see, okay, this is what it needs to look like. And then the second form of visualization is imagining what you should be seeing. So if this is me and that's you, so I should see you here and then I should see you there, for example. And then you take a look from the outside too. So there's basically two, there's like an introspective form of visualization where you think about what you should see. And then there's the visualization where you think about if someone was watching you do this thing, what it should look like from the outside.
Okay. You know, when I talk to people about skydiving, something I heard, and I want to talk about myth now, is that the 100th jump is done naked. And is there any like funny things or myth that are totally wrong or totally true, and you want to share with us?
Yeah, the 100th jump naked is not done in every country. Definitely in South Africa, it's a thing. Like I did my 100th jump naked, yeah, for sure. But some people, like as I've traveled and I say, it's your 100th jump, you should jump naked. They're like, what are you talking about? You know, so it depends about which country you're in and what's the kind of the vibe there for that type of celebration. But it's definitely a big milestone, right? Like most people, the most amount of people who will experience skydiving will do one jump, right? Do a tandem.
Yeah.
And then a very, very small percentage of those people will go on to get their license. And then even smaller percentage of those people will arrive to 100 jumps, and then less and less to 1,000, then 10,000. So it becomes just pretty special milestones for basically your commitment to the sport and your time in the sport. And then it's also pretty much only the people who've been down that road who are going to appreciate it. Other people just think you're completely crazy, you know?
So is there anything, because you have already 19,000 jumps, is there any big landmark on the 20,000th jump or something that you have to do? Because I guess not many people do so many jumps.
Yeah, not so much. I would say like it's not so much that you have to do, right? It's just probably a celebration, you know, because it's going to mark a very significant amount of time and commitment to doing something obsessively, basically. So I think the celebration is arriving at that point and sharing it with people who are happy for you to be there and hopefully have a good time, you know, like maybe do your 20,000th jump and then I don't know, have some beers or something. I don't know, like, but connected to that idea of the naked jump on the 100th. Sometimes there's like the pie in the face is another one. So they just bait you land. And then I think that's like a lot of places do that for 100 or 1,000. So you land from your jump and then they like puts pies in your face or something like that. But pretty random, I suppose.
I have three last questions, Will.
Sure.
What is your biggest fear?
Huh. In life or
in life? Skydiving?
I suppose my biggest fear in life would be having not lived it. And not allowed yourself to live it, and that goes down to many, many levels, right? Like I suppose the fear of being alone and with your choices or being alone, like and not having truly loved and not pursued your passion and yeah. But like, if I had to put one kind of sentence to that answer, would be my biggest fear would be having not to have lived it, and that would be in many areas of my life. Mm-hmm.
what are you currently doing that you still don't know how it will turn out?
Well, every single day of my life. Like all of us, I suppose. Nobody has a clue how today is going to turn out or tomorrow is, but we just got to keep on charging ahead, you know?
So the last thing is less a question. It's more, I learn from the stories of people, like from your story, but I learn the most if I have one thing that I can put into action. Is there anything, any lesson that you learned or anything connected to your career, connected to your passion, connected to your life that anybody of us like me or the listeners can do that we can bring your story into our lives?
Yeah, I believe so. And I would say that would be to be true to yourself. And really pursue that passion that you have, regardless of if you want to make it a career or you want to make it something that you do for a short period of time, or you just create more time to do it. But everybody has a passion inside of them, or several, and are honest with ourselves and actually give time for that, you know, and I believe if you pursue that passion, it's one of the best things you can do for your own life.
I'm very, very happy that you said this, because today is the day where I was like, should I really pursue my passion? And I will take your advice and continue.
That's awesome. And what is it, if you don't mind me asking?
My passion, I want that people connect more. I have the sensation that we're striving so much to be like special in our kind, and we sometimes lose that humankind is there to connect with others. And I would love that people connect more. And if I sometimes can be the connecting dot or the link, this would make me very humble and grateful.
But it seems like what you're doing with the podcast is already a good step in that direction.
Thanks for saying it. But you know that sometimes you have these, situations in life where it's a bit tricky. So I'm really happy that you said it.
That's cool. No, but I mean, yeah, I think you're already on that path. So just to keep going for it, right? If it makes you happy and it makes you fulfilled, then that makes everything worth it, right?
Yeah. Thank you for talking to me. Finally, I can say I know Will Penny.
Thank you for having me on your show, and I look forward to hearing the final result.